Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty, a daily podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and I just wanted to go through some thoughts ahead. I'm in the middle of a startup draft, and I'm diving into some research, and I figured I'd share a little of the stuff that I just have on my mind, because I do think it's interesting. I was reading some quotes. I went back to the Hinckley letter. In the Hinckley letter, so this is the Sam Hinckley letter. I'll link it here. This is a foundational AOD reading. I really need to get to the foundational AOD reading section of the AOD website. I really need to actually create that because I keep saying I'm going to do it, and I'm not. I don't end up doing it, but I need to. This needs to get done. So maybe it's a July. It seems like a July project. But in it, he discusses Howard Marks, and Howard Marks is an investment. He's an investor, and he says Howard Marks describes a necessary condition of great performance. You have to be non-consensus and right. Both. That means you have to find some way to be. Have a differentiated viewpoint from the masses, and it needs to be right. Anything less won't work. I've gone about trying to find some ways to be different. And one of the things, like there's another quote that when you look up Howard Marks, he says there's some additional stuff from him, and a quote that I found that I think is pretty good is, if you think and behave different from other people and you're more right than they are, that's a necessary ingredient, then you can have superior performance, right? And I do think that's something that we strive to do, find where we can be different and where we're right. And hammer those things. Roster construction is a big deal, right? Being more running backs than wide receivers, being on running backs a lot, right? Not caring about developmental success outside the top 150 picks, right? Something like that. But thinking along the lines of the hierarchy of assets, right? Constantly moving up the board, not worrying about depth. All of those things, right, those are different. There's a pretty good track record that they are right historically, and the market hasn't adjusted, right? All this is saying is find inefficiencies and exploit them, right? It's what we've been trying to do. One thing I've been really toying around with is the two-way go, and I want to really push the envelope on this, right? I really want to look at this and really try and figure out ways that we can exploit the market in ways that allow us to both be productive in the near term and be long-term successful. And I always go back to the thing of, like, when we're thinking about wide receivers, if we draft a wide receiver that has hit four rounds later than a wide receiver that has hit, excuse me, that has not hit, right? So if you basically, the round seven wide receiver that has hit is equivalent to the round three, four wide receiver who has not hit, right? So that's sort of as a general rule. And if you sort of can take that to its logical end, right? If you can trade that spread and you sort of know that that's what you're going to do, huge advantage there. Right? And so I've been thinking really about ways to really try and push the envelope on some of this stuff. And I like to try it in advance because there's, in sort of in my own solitude, because there is some stuff I think that we can potentially add and that I can sort of flesh out first and then give you guys some feedback. But one of the things that I actually went and did in the course of doing some of this research was I went back and I looked at, I just took five, I'm in the process of going back the whole off season, but I took basically the five premium or higher Safe Leagues drafts, the five most recent ones. And Safe Leagues, if you're familiar, we play this a lot, right? Super flex, tight end premium. It's two PPR for tight end. I like this as a research project because I can find a lot of leagues that are the same, right? It doesn't matter too much, I don't think. Like, if it's, you know, some of the positional stuff will be a little bit different and the like, but generally I want a lot of, the reason I use it is I want a lot of data, right? And I can get a lot of data from looking at these drafts. There's different years, right? There's all these things, right? So that's really why I use this, and frankly I play it and I want to exploit it, right? So that's all the stuff. that we I kind of look at, I kind of think about. And I actually just went back and I looked at, I wanted to see how many startup draft trades there were in these drafts. And I wanted to find out, you know, really what stuff was going on, right? And because I have kind of a theory, which is that that you can really benefit by someone trading up for a wide receiver. And I've noticed it like more recently, and I think that there might be a split in the calendar. Like I'm really interested in this, and it's probably going to be more of a multi-year research thing. And maybe it'll even make AOD 2023 in the form of like a multi-year research thing, because I do think there might be something here, and it's just some small trends that I've been doing, but it's interesting. So So I went back and I looked at the five, and so I categorized basically a handful of things. So I looked at the amount of trade ups that have happened, and I just defined a trade up as just a move. Someone moved up in the draft, right? Basically a trade during the startup draft. Someone's moving up, someone's moving back, right? Just a trade in the draft. The average is 20.8. There's not a consistent trend on when they're happening. It feels like they've been happening more a little bit later, but that hasn't been what the data actually suggests. It's been a little bit all over the place. So an average of 20.8, a median of 21, an average of 3.8 first round trades. So basically almost a third of the trades, the median is 4. So you think about a third of the first round are first round trades. Trade ups by position was really interesting. And I started this because I thought wide receivers were a lot. They were the most traded up for thing. That comes with the caveat of like they're the most drafted position. So 6.6 of the, on average, there's 6.6 trade ups where the pick that is traded up for selects a wide receiver, 6.4 for running backs, 4.2 for quarterbacks, and then 3.6 for tight ends. Again, not a huge sample. It's only five leagues, but again, we're trying to find some more data, and we will get some more. You know, I'm recording this July 1st, so we should have some more data here throughout the off season. But some interesting trends there. I have seen, and I have to go and do some more thought process on this, but I have noticed of late that you are getting more people willing to trade up and give future capital for rookie picks now. I think that is by far the most exploitable thing that we can do in drafts right now, because it is immensely valuable to be on the other side of that bet. I was on that side of the bet last year, where someone traded up, got a future first, and took like Trevor Lawrence, right? Like got and did wide receivers as well. Like there's a lot of people that for some reason that doesn't make any sense to me to do, right? Oh, I want to trade future capital so that way I can draft young right now. That's the opposite of basically a two-way go, right? Like a two-way go is like, let's open up a window now and like in the future, and then, you know, we'll decide our fate as the fate presents itself, right? If we're right in the near-term window, then we can shift some of that future assets to now. If we're wrong in the near term, right, we're sort of building in that contingency, well, we can shift some of that near-term assets into the future. And so that's really some of the stuff that I've been trying to do. So I went ahead and actually did this in the league that I am in, a handful of trades that I've done. And, you know, I come at this with a couple of things. Let's see sort of how this board develops and be flexible to it, right? So again, I did a list of things. There's earlier on in the off season that I talked about that I wanted to, try and accomplish in these drafts. Two supermax quarterbacks, two tight ends that are up in like the top six, preferably, right? you know, three top 10 guys would be ideal. Four top 20 is good. You know, 500 targets out of the top four wide receivers and a whole bunch of running backs. Right? That's kind of what I'm trying to accomplish. In this particular draft, I tend not to trade up, which is interesting because I end up doing it a bunch in this draft. But I did draw, I ended up drawing the 107, right? And that'd give me 206. And I ended up trading up, to get up into the top three there. Tried, and ultimately was successful. I went from 107 and 507 to 103 and 810. I'll make that trade up as long as it doesn't cost me future assets, like especially from that range. And that's not making any real significant difference on my team, especially if I'm sort of thinking wide receiver in that range, like it's a flat range. So I kind of know that. I move up and I take Herbert at the top, you know, at the bottom of that tier, right? That it's Allen, Mahomes, and Herbert. So I get inside that line. And then, like, it's a relatively quick pace after that. And this is one thing that I've seen, and I've been more, I don't know if attentive is the right word, but I've been more willing to not be subject to the whims of others on how my board falls. So, again, I'm sitting at 206, and I'm kind of thinking, all right, there's a really good shot that Watson gets to me because this is like in the peak Watson is a villain time frame. Again, this isn't that long ago. It's 10 days ago at this point. But I think there's a reasonable chance of that. Like, there's a better than 50% chance that Wilson or Stafford are there at 206. And so that's kind of my thought. Like, hey, if those guys are gone, maybe the tight end gets to me, something like that. Yeah, I'm open to the idea of a Jalen Hurts or something like that, but I don't love that. I'd much rather go with Wilson, Stafford, or Watson, really, as in the round two. And so I'm watching. Dak gets to 112, and I'm like, all right, well, that's actually late. Jonathan Taylor goes ahead of him. Jefferson, Chase, Pitts all go ahead of him. Najee Harris goes at 201, and I'm just kind of sitting there. I'm like, all right, like, I'm in really good shape, right? That's kind of early for Najee Harris to go, right? And someone not taking quarterback there, you know, that person went Pitts, Najee Harris, and was actually part of my, he was on the flip side of my trade down. So there's some, there looks to be like the quarterback's going to slide to me. Next two guys off the board, Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson. I'm sitting there at 206 and I'm like, all right, this is like, I got to kind of put a stop to this because I want to get inside this line. I want Stafford, Wilson, or Watson to be my quarterback too. Stafford's the only one left. And listen, if the quarterbacks are going fast, like, we kind of got to get out in front of this and I can't let it slide. It's something that I haven't really done as much in the past. That was a rare strategy, honestly, for me. I wasn't a big trade up person. I've changed that. Like, I kind of know now, maybe not necessarily specific players, but you see what I did here, right? This is a specific type of profile, right? We have a name for it now. It's a supermax. I want to sort of be in that line. Russell Wilson's sort of towing that line a little bit. He's basically the next guy off there. Him and Lamar are really the next guys off there that I could, you know, really put on there with some confidence. Kyler Murray is a little bit further behind that, but you get the idea, right? Like, this is kind of what I'm shooting for in terms of taking one of those guys, right? Taking that profile in the second round. I see one of the profile left, I move up to get it, right? So that's really, that's, I think, something that hasn't been as common for me in the past and was able to get it done here. I move up. Again, I don't love giving future capital, but I will flip-flop future capital, right? Just to sort of get my, to get inside my line, I'll make a small move. So what do? I give up 206 and a future second, my future second, for 204 and a future third, right? So I did a flip-flop. That person who did that trade now is, he has Hurts and Murray. Again, I'm like half, I still have some time to go in this draft, but is largely drafted young. right? So I think that's I'm through. He has 17 players on his board as I'm drafting this. I'm not going to wait the whole time. Like, this kind of is who his team is core wise at this point, anyways. Isaiah Spiller, Rashad White are his two running backs. Ayuk, AJ Brown, Godwin, Judy, Christian Kirk, Rondale Moore, Justin Ross, and Jalen Tolbert, Freiermuth, Kmet, Irv Smith, Daniel Bellinger. Right, so not super scared that pick's going to be that late. Right, so again, if I'm sort of in that playoff mix, I'm dropping from mid second to probably an early third is kind of my math there. So I'm not really moving down that far. And listen, I can figure out a way to make up that second at some point later along the line, because I'm willing to move back where I don't think the difference is that great in moving back. The difference is worth paying up at the quarterback position when we get inside the line, right? An easy difference there. And again, one prior Jordan from 5 years ago would say, like, all right, like, this is kind of my rule. I'm sticking to it throughout the draft, of not trading up, right? And Jordan now, there's different parts of the draft, right? And I think that's one thing we really think about this. We're thinking about Supermax. We're thinking about stars. We're thinking about core assets, right? And getting up inside those lines, and then, you know, being willing when there's a bigger tier and where it's not super consequential to differentiate between players in those tiers, you be willing to slide down, right? And I do that accordion play here as we go along. So I make that move up and I say, all right, like, I'll make back the capital at somewhere along the line. So what happens? I get to 307. And I just get crushed along the way. Really tough here in terms of some of the stuff I was trying to accomplish. 301 goes Kittle. 302 goes Kelsey. 306 goes Waller. And I'm like, man, like, McCaffrey's gone. Like, Kupp's gone. There's like a lot of stuff that I was like, I could do. You know, I was thinking along the way of like, all right, well, maybe I'll take Swift. Right, he goes at 304. I thought, like, hey, what if I go Carr? Right, if Carr's available there and he's like in the mid teens at the quarterback position, like, does that give me some pivot opportunities? Like, you know, what you know, just try thinking out different things. He goes ahead of me, right? Like, all these ideas are percolating through my mind. Hurts is gone, Lance is gone, right? There's a big chasm there. And especially at tight end, right? So my play for getting two, for basically going quarterback, tight end is totally shot. And I say, okay, well, let's pivot, right? Like, all right, this, we'll regroup, we'll figure this out, right? Instantly, we know we're going to have to play tight end position a little bit differently. We're probably going to need some depth at tight end. We're probably going to maybe go a little bit older. We're not going to get some of the elite assets, but we can do a blend, right? Take some shots. Right, we're gonna really aim for Goddard, right? And but maybe if I slide back a little bit, maybe I can go Hutchinson and Goddard, right? I don't want to necessarily reach on Hutchinson, but if I can go back another round, maybe I can get Hutchinson and Goddard, right? Thinking about those things, right? So being open to some different ideas, saying, hey, you know, maybe Ertz is a target guy for us, right? And rethinking, hey, that there's a lot of guys in that 8 through 20 range. I don't necessarily need to be super sticky on anyone, but if I can get two, that's a goal, right? I don't necessarily need to be, it's got to be player X, but it's got to be one of 10 of them, right? That's kind of my play in that range. And I know I have some flexibility, but I really have to prioritize that because I'm sort of left out early, right? So I do want to play some of that depth stuff, maybe get another ceiling shot. So anyways, I get to 307 and there's nothing there for me to really do. I'm not going to reach on Hockenson. I'm not going to reach on Goddard. No play at quarterback. Like, I'm not really trying to distinguish at wide receiver. Let me move down. And I say, basically, I'll move from the third round. I'm looking for a first, and I'll take, you know, I want another pick in the top, you know, basically 80 or so. But I'll move back, right? It's a relatively flat tier. 3 to 7 and a first, I think, is good process, generally speaking. And so I make the deal. It's worth noting at this point, now I've got the fourth rounder coming up, and I don't have a fifth rounder. So I'm going to have a squeeze here in some way, shape, or form. Am I going to try and slide back You know, I do like that range from like 6 through 8, right? So I've already put myself with another pick in that range with the 7th pick, and I moved the 5th back to the 8th in my initial trade. So now I'm like sort of I'm double dipping in the 7th and the 8th round at this point. And so I get to the 4th round, and again, there's not a ton there that I really like. Right out in front of me goes guys like AJ Brown and Aaron Rodgers went, Higgins, DJ Moore, Jalen Waddle goes. Like Cam Akers could have been a potential guy for me there, but I'm kind of like but he goes right in front of me. Barkley might have been interesting. He goes the pick in front of me, and so I'm kind of sitting there and I'm like, there's not much that I really love in this range. And I could say, all right, like Akers and Barkley go 8 and 9. Right? Do I really want to take running back 10? That doesn't really feel great, you know. And again, that's not a place of the draft that I feel super confident in taking. Do I want to take Hockenson or Goddard? They've kind of slid, and there is a tier break there. It's a good chunk of break between those guys in terms of expected draft position here, usually. And again, between Hockenson and those other guys, the higher up guys, especially Goddard too. Again, I kind of like Goddard as much, if not more, than Hockenson in terms of some of the elite ceiling stuff. And I say, all right, well, let me see if I can slide back a little bit. Maybe I can get inside the window to get multiple of them. It's kind of my thought, right? So I go from 406 to 602 and grab a future second. Again, I make up the future second back, right? I get the future second back. And that team at present is has Matt Corral, Baker Mayfield, Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson as the core there. Andrews is on that team. So there's some holes potentially, especially at quarterback. A little bit of blend at wide receiver. It doesn't have a super specific team build. It's kind of funny. But they do have Etienne, Madison, Pollard, Darrell Williams on that team as well. So a little bit of blend there. By the way, I forgot to fill out the best part, the punchline of me moving back from 307 to 710 in a future first. The person traded up for Drake London. So that's one of those things where, again, I'd like to be on that, right? And the best part about it is when you're moving down, think about this too. When you're moving down in a range, if you're getting future capital that's attached to that player and you're not doing it in a range where they're trading up for quarterback, it's a pretty good chance they're doing it for a vulnerable position. There's a pretty good chance they're making a mistake, right? And that's the you want to sort of be fueling that, right? That's a big thing that I really think about in terms of doing that. Like that, if they're going to come up in a range where I don't have a specific player that really can make a deal, like this isn't them coming up for McCaffrey, right? This is past that. And okay, well, what are you doing? Oh, you're coming up for the wide receiver one in this rookie class, right? That's the exact bet that I want to be on the opposite side of, right? So that's the punchline there. Again, then I move back from 406 to 602. Right, that guy's got some quarterback questions as well. And I move, I get to the 6th round. Again, remember, I don't have a 5th. And so I get to the 6th round, and at 602, I actually had tried to trade back into the 5th round. I actually tried to go up to the 412 and 501 range. I tried to go to that actual turn with my 6th and tack on a future second to sort of take those two picks and get Hockenson and Goddard. I tried to move up. There's a couple guys that had picks pretty close to each other in that range. I tried to keep going up to sort of get them to try and double hit the position. Was unable to do that. Hockenson goes ahead of me, and then I'm able to get Goddard at 602. So my start to the draft, basically through 62 picks, I've traded up for Herbert, I traded up for Stafford, and then I've traded down basically twice, and then I take Goddard. I get to 606. Again, that's one of the picks that I had traded down earlier on. I get to 606, and someone was, hey, I'll send a future first for one of these picks in here. And I said, okay, like give me something in the – you know, and he was basically trying to do it for nothing additional capital. Someone had done that where basically gave, I think it was like a really early sixth for a 28th rounder and a future first or something like that. I said, well, give me a shot at an injury way guy, right? Like, don't give me just a roster spot. Give me a shot at an injury way guy. So I went and I said, I'll do the deal, right? I don't have a great feeling in this range of a guy that I want to take, right? I'm going to take a wide receiver. You know, Dylan would have been there, but am I going to take a first or Dylan? Like, give me the flexibility on the first, right? No one at quarterback. I guess I could have went Brady, right? And it was felt a little early for Fournette and Connor and some of those guys. And so I just said, you know what? Give me the first and I'll figure the rest out. Right. And at this point, now I'm getting three firsts. And this is, again, me opening the two-way go. What's happened right now? Well, I'm at this point where I've got two guys that I really like at quarterback. I have solutions at quarterback. And I've got a core tight end. And so I'm saying, okay, I'm sitting in all right position at those. But I've built a lot of flexibility, right? I've got a future extra. At this point, I've got an extra third. I've got an extra first as well. And I always say, I think wide receiver depth is the most solvable issue, because as you go along, there'll be people out of contention that don't want to hold wide receivers going into their 28, 29-year-old window. You can buy them, and that's a cheap solution. We know that running back can be, with a volume approach between the 15th and the 28th round, we know that that can be a solution to, you know, what is that? 13, 14 starts in that range, right? We might be able to yank 20, right? That might be a position and a half through the course of a regular season on a contending team, right? You can eat up a running back and a half spot just by being super aggressive sort of in that range with just a volume of players. And so I feel confident that I can make up those edges, right? Just with superior roster construction in those ranges of the draft. So I felt confident in trading back. And again, listen, if I'm wrong, and I've got pivot opportunities, right? If those things don't work out, but I'm moving down with the eye of the price of, hey, seventh, eighth, ninth round, where I've got multiple picks in the so I had 602 and then I trade 606, but I have got future additional picks in the seventh round. I've got additional future picks in the eighth. And I know I'm basically going to pick between, you know, 602 in the ninth round. I'm going to pick four times in that range, relatively close range of the draft, where there's a lot of guys that I like that are win now guys, right? So think about this, right? I'm trading down and I'm moving down the board. I mean, just think about what I do in terms of trading 710. Right? I trade 307 for 710. And a future first. 307 is Drake London. 710 is Keenan Allen and a future first. I'm going to beat Drake London in current production almost assuredly in the next 2 years with Keenan Allen. And I've got the future pick, right? I'm contending with Allen while actually building a bankroll with the pick. While someone's like, I'll move up and take this really certain bet, it's the total opposite of what we want to do, right? That is 100% AOD applied, right? You go from 307 in a rookie wide receiver to 710 in a wide receiver in their late 20s and a future first, right? It's, you win that trade a ton of the time you win that trade. And that's the thing that you really look for. So I move back. I move out of 606. I get that future first. I get into the 20th round. By the way, the person trades up for Terry McLaurin. So I've traded my pick twice for future first. I get Drake London. They take Terry McLaurin. I haven't made that 20th rounder. Like, I have Samaje Perine in my mind as the player that's going to be there. That's just who I keep thinking of when I sort of see that extra 20th round pick, but I haven't made it as of this recording. But Keenan Allen's the other piece of that deal, right? So it's actually Keenan Allen. I do know what the deal on the Drake London is. It's Keenan Allen in a future first. So we'll see what the actual player is with the Terry McLaurin one. But again, would I trade a Terry McLaurin straight up for a future first and try and add back to it? Right? Could I figure that out? Right? That's a range where generally I think I would rather take the first, right? And so and see what I can do later on. So so that's then we get into the seventh round, and again, I'm still trying to compete. I haven't punted my season away, right? And listen, there's people, and we'll get to it in a second. There's people that might say like this is idiotic, but I think it's idiotic to trade up to mortgage future capital to try and make very certain bets on rookies right now. I think that's idiotic. I would rather trade down, get the future flexibility, and open up multiple windows, right? Because listen, I know that we don't need to use that capital at the draft. I can use that capital at any point along the way, and this is the way to do it. So I get to 707, and frankly, right, at this point, we can take big swings here. We can take, I don't have, like, if I don't pick, if I'm unsuccessful, I've got probably an early rookie pick, and I've got core quarterbacks, I've got a good tight end, right? And all of a sudden, right, I've got the ability to really put together a really good core with three first round picks. Again, that's probably trading some of that along the way, right? But I'm not super, super worried about the long term because I kind of got that covered in my back pocket with the picks, right? So I can sort of build out to, again, if I'm playing in a 2-year window, kind of over and over again, I can just keep sort of maximizing that 2-year window and be consistently competitive. It's sort of how I view this. And this is the prime time to take those guys, right? This is an excellent time to take those guys. So what do we do? 707, that's my own pick. Alvin Kamara, right? Running back in the 20s. It's the cheapest Kamara has ever been. Maybe outside of the early rookie season, running back 22. That is behind Antonio Gibson, behind Aaron Jones. It's actually behind Leonard Fournette and A.J. Dillon, for example. Again, like I like those guys. I like Dillon. I like Fournette. I actually like Aaron Jones quite a bit. And Kamara is going a round later. He goes more than a round after A.J. Dillon does. So that's the deal there. And then Keenan Allen, I will note that I actually peeked at this a little bit, and I did make a little bit of a strategic decision in terms of this. I wanted to take Kamara and Allen as I got to 707. My goal was to net both of them. I looked at the board, and I made a couple of determinations pretty easily. I looked at the person that had seven. I had seven. I looked at the person that had eight and nine, and I sort of wanted to see what they were going to do. The person that had eight in the round, so they would have been the next pick after me, Jamar Chase, Trevor Lawrence, Tua, Mac Jones, Akers Barkley, Dillon. So he's got one wide receiver, but he has gone young. I almost have 100% certainty that person's not picking Keenan Allen. So I am all right there, right? But I do think there's a somewhat chance that they could pick Kamara, right? They haven't really drafted a ton of wide receivers yet. I'm not entirely certain what their core is, what their plan is, but it doesn't look like aging wide receivers there, right? Maybe they're trying to go productive, competitive running back. But I don't think that Allen is a target for that team. That was pretty clear to me. The other one that, and this one, I wasn't super sure on this one. This was a little bit of a calculated bet, but I said they at this point had Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, AJ Brown, Chris Godwin. They had traded down a bit as well. And so I looked at this and said, I think it's more likely that they go running back than wide receiver. And this is actually the team that doesn't take Rashad White until much later on. I've discussed them earlier, and they owe me some future capital. And so I said, I think the more likely pick to go between these next two is Kamara. So I say, all right, I'm going to take Kamara first. I almost certain Allen's going to fall to me, and he does, right? So that was a really easy thing. But again, when you have picks in a close range, give it some thought, right? It didn't take me super, super long, right? I might have looked 10 minutes going through some stuff. I didn't know any of these people. I would have gone and looked some other rosters, right? But those little edges, right, marginal gains, add them up. They can stack up and be valuable. that was one where it was easy to just do that and think about it. Listen, the guy went wide receiver in between those picks. He went Bateman, right? So I kind of was on the right track of he's not going wide, aging wide receiver, and I got the two of them. So first five picks, Herbert, Stafford, Goddard, Kamara, and Keenan Allen. I go into the eighth round. Again, I'm going to double hit this. And 806, James Conner's there. Again, I think the spread between him and Fournette of multiple rounds isn't right at this point. So I just say, okay, I'm just arbing him. It's Conner basically running back 24, five spots later at the position than Fournette. Fournette went at 611. Conner goes at 806. So a nice round and a half of equity there between those two guys. I'm in there on that. And Jacobs was a guy too that I liked, but honestly think as I looked at it, I was like, Jacobs doesn't have the same level of security that Conner does. Conner's actually kind of in a 2-year window. Jacobs, I'm not sure. We debated this and kicked it around a little bit in the chat. I thought about, and this was a spot where if I look back at this in a year, I might kick my own ass, if to use a Jim Carrey phrase. But I looked at this board and I was like, again, I can get wide receiver later on. I looked at the board and I said, there's a bunch of guys in here that I'm fine to take, right? As I sat there on the board and had James Conner, Amari Cooper, there's 29 wide receivers off the board at that point. There's a bunch of guys that I really, really am fine with. And again, if I could nail two of them, I'm happy. Cooper, Darnell Mooney, Brandon Cooks, Cortland Sutton, Amon-Ra St. Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Brandon Ayuk is somewhere in that vicinity. Allen Robinson, Christian Watson, Chris Olave. And if I want to go younger, younger guys in that range, heck, Kadarius Toney, Juju Smith-Schuster later on, Lockett later on. So I'm thinking like if I can nail kind of two or three of those guys and I feel good, right? Michael Thomas, if we keep going later, right? Like there's a big range of those guys that I would like to kind of get three of them, maybe a blend of them was sort of the thought, right? If I could get three of the next maybe 12 wide receivers, something like that, I could be very interesting. But they go off absurdly fast, right? So I end up taking Jacobs with the simple decision of like which thing is least common right now. This is a big NBA thing that we see when you're drafting. Do you draft a point guard or do you draft a wing? Like point guards are a dime a dozen, like 6'8 guys that can shoot threes, handle the ball, and are switchable on defense aren't very common. And you take the thing that's not that common. Right? I think that honestly, we can really dive into metrics and we can, fight on podcasts about, roles and all the stuff. But really when it boils down to it, if you just look at the board and say, which thing here is the rarest, let's do that. That's going to point you in a good direction most of the time. At this point, there's 15 wide receivers that we could have debated, and we did in the group chat. There was a healthy, robust debate about Mooney, about all these other guys, right? And about, who we should take. Well, if that's the case, that's not the right answer. Let's look elsewhere if that's the case. Zeke's off the board. And at that point, there's really one starting running back left that we really like, and it's Jacobs, and you just take him, right? That's the deal. So that's a really easy one. Which, of course, precedes a wide receiver run of nearly epic proportion. It is literally wide receivers go off the board all the way until my next pick, with the exception of one player. So I pick at 8:10, and I then pick again at 9:07, and only one pick between there is all the picks between there are wide receivers. There's wide receivers taken at every pick between my pick and the next pick. And they include Darnell Mooney, Brandon Cooks, right? Guys that I'm interested in, which makes me feel great. Cortland Sutton, Amon-Ra St. Brown, again, who I would have been sort of fine with at the back half of this tier. Devonta Smith, not so much. Chris Olave, yes, would have been interested in sort of in this tier. Allen Robinson, yes. Sky Moore, yes. And I'm like, you got to be kidding. Like, there's almost no set of circumstances where that happens right in front of me. And those things happen, right? So I pivot at this point and I say, all right, what's, if I am going to open up a window here to win, give me a player that can help me do that. What player helps me do that? Not setting a lineup in June, not setting a lineup in July. I want to win in November or December. What's the player that's on the board that can that can shape my dynasty odds? And that I'm not going to be able to get later on, which, again, maybe I miscalculate on this. Guys like Kadarius Toney, I were hoping to get another round later, and they don't make it back to me. What's the guy that can do this? And I come down to DeAndre Hopkins. What's the rare guy in this range? The established wide receiver one that's coming at a discount. Wide receiver 39. It's the cheapest he's ever been. Again, is it a sure thing? No. He was actually sneaky efficient last year. And I say, okay, well, we'll do this, right? He's actually, I think, better than his numbers would suggest last year. Some of the usage stuff is a little weird. But otherwise, I don't think he had that. Like, people are writing him off too soon is the quickest way to say that. So I take him. He's my wide receiver two. Again, it looks funky. It looks kind of funky. It looks aged. Kamara, Keenan Allen, James Conner, Josh Jacobs, and Hopkins. I get to the 10th round, and listen, I was thinking about taking Zach Ertz. Was going to probably be the play. Would have been what I would have done there. Kadarius Toney had gone off the board, and by that time as well, yeah, Kadarius Toney was off the board, I believe. Yeah, right in front of me. And, you know, I could have went Juju as well. I thought probably I'm going to pivot to tight end. Again, I like guys like Lockett. I was willing to do that. Marquez Valdes-Scantling was a guy that I was going to take ahead of ADP because I wanted a shot of pairing someone with Mahomes, and that's the bet that I want to make. And so I said, all right, like, I can sort of potentially go tight end here. It was still a little bit early for Ertz. I thought there was a potential that he could slide, but I kind of like there was still some wide receiver stuff that I could potentially exploit there, especially Lockett, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and I was going to basically have those guys as kind of a top four. Again, it was going to be weak, but I said to myself, I've got assets that can fill this hole along the way. So if I am competitive, I don't have to worry about wide receiver because I will be able to figure that out. That is a solvable issue if the rest of my team build is right. So we'll worry about the rest of the team build and the most replaceable thing that I can figure out along the way. And I can probably even replace it for free. Or if push comes to shove, I can just start Marquez Valdes-Scantling every week and just take, you know, whatever, even if it's not great, you know, you're just trying to take embracing some variance, take Lockett, take Allen. And then just, we're going to go super turbo tight end. Or we're going to go turbo running back, right? And just say, all right, my worst position is wide receiver. Right? I'm okay with that. If that's the worst thing that happens, I'm fine. So I wasn't going to chase that as an issue. We get to the 10th round again. I thought there was a chance that Ertz might get to me. But I get an offer it's frankly too good to pass up, even if I wasn't going to get Ertz. And so the offer comes to me and it's give 10.06. I get 12.10, right? So basically move back two rounds, a little over two rounds. Basically move back a little over two rounds, right? Move back from 10.06 to 12.10 and get a future second and a future fourth, right? Which was a lot. Like, that seems like a really good get there. Again, the future second, that solves my wide receiver issue if I've got it. Again, so do I want to sit here and try and take a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster, who, frankly, I might not be able to trade for a future second? Or do I want to pocket that and figure that out? And is Juju Smith-Schuster ever going to go for more than a second? Right? Even if he's the answer in Kansas City, I'm not sure. Right? So that, to me, that second right there is a wide receiver issue, is a wide receiver solved problem. if I'm competitive, right? I can use that pick. I know when I make this trade that if I am good, I can use that pick to fix my wide receiver problem that I'm about to create by trading down, probably going to create by trading down. Same with tight end, right? Like I am plus 2 seconds. And as I'm sitting here, if I am right early, right, if Kamara's good, if I get off to a good start, if I'm competitive, I know that those two picks can help me solve tight end and it can help me solve wide receiver, right? And they're in the form of liquid currency, and we'll figure that out. And listen, if I struggle out the gate, right, I can pivot, but I have those two things in my mind as I am making these deals and moving down the board. I have those two situations solved, because I can use those picks for that in the future. So I do the deal because, frankly, it's too good to pass up, right? I just have to do the deal. It's too good to pass up. Ertz goes in the meantime. Like, listen, would I have loved to have had him? Yeah. Can I trade him for a second and a fourth? Probably not, would be my guess. And I'm going to get another sort of pick in the range. I said when I made this pick that I'm basically trading Ertz for Hunter Henry in a future second, was what I had in my mind when I pressed the button. That's what I said to myself. So Ertz goes off the board a couple picks later. The person trades up for Kadarius Toney. He trades up for Dawson Knox. Kadarius Toney goes right after me. I think I said he went before me earlier. I thought he was going to slide. I thought I might be able to get him another round later. Same with like Dotson and Juju Smith-Schuster. Those guys sort of in that range as well. I thought maybe I'd get a shot at one of those guys in the 11th round or even in the 12th round, and they go a couple picks after me. It's fine. And so I get into the 11th round, Lockett staring there. It's a really easy decision. I take him. And that sort of fills out my top three wide receivers. And the 12th round comes. I take Henry right in the 12th round where I said I was going to do. That's exactly what I do. It's funny because Trey McBride goes in this range as well. I just think, hey, there's a, like, it's going to be, it might be a long hold for him. That ain't great. And, I'll take Hunter Henry because I know he can, like, he's probably a flex play for me, right? Already in this construction, he's probably right around the flex line, and we'll figure it out, right? Like that'd be fine there, especially in the format. I come back a couple picks later and I take Evan Ingram as well. We had a little discussion there about Evan Ingram, and again, rare profiles is I think really what we came down to, right? There's a lot of running backs in this range we like, but frankly, there's like a dozen of them, maybe 20 of them, right, that we like. How many tight ends do we like after Evan Ingram? Like, not many, like maybe one. So take the guy that's rare, right? And that's Evan Ingram. Would have given some consideration to Wentz as well as if he was in here, but he wasn't. Goff had gone already, would have given them both consideration. It probably in the 11th round, certainly for Goff if he was there, but he wasn't. So I took Lockett, and then I take Hunter Henry and Evan Ingram. And then 13th round, I take Marquez Valdes-Scantling, wide receiver 57. I said, listen, there's a chance, and I've done this twice now. I don't know if who the wide receiver one is there. There's a chance that it's no one. But if I'm right, this is the ability to make a massive difference from this cost. And the next wide receiver off the board is Russell Gage, Alec Pierce goes, Jalen Tolbert, Michael Gallup, right? Rondale Moore goes a little bit later, Calvin Ridley, you know, Tyler Boyd, Donovan Peoples-Jones. That's the range that you're in. Is it a good chance that I miss? Yep. But what success looks like is a fat tail, right? And one of the things that I keep thinking about is you expand out, you know, 3, 4, 5 tenths of a second more on some of these dropbacks, and how damaging is a guy like Marquez Valdes-Scantling, where Rodgers was never there to see that, right? Rodgers was never hanging out in the pocket to see what 4 tenths of a second more of Marquez Valdes-Scantling running down the field look like? And Mahomes will do that. And I think in a way that could really benefit Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Mahomes will cater to what he does, just because Mahomes doesn't want to sit in the pocket and he wants to play the scramble game. And that profile is super suited to a guy like Marquez Valdes-Scantling. So that is really my thought there. Again, I think there's a big miss potential, but I do think there's a big, like, what success looks like can be a lot better than a lot of these other guys. And honestly, like, Marquez Valdes-Scantling has accomplishments in his range of outcomes that a guy like Alan Lazard, who went two rounds earlier, just doesn't. That's just a fact. And so I'm willing to take that bimodal bet. And listen, if he's not good, like, I can move on. I can, but again, and at worst case scenario, he's a boom bust flex play when I need it, right? That's the worst case scenario for me, is kind of how I view that pick. I'm willing to take the big swing. He's one of the last really big swings I'll take at the wide receiver position. So I just wanted to flesh that out a little bit. Then we really pivot 14th round, Brian Robinson, 15th round, TDP, Terrion Davis-Price, running backs 46 and 52 respectively. I go Logan Thomas at tight end 28, just because I'm like I kind of have to, right? Like, at that range, like, is there a guy in that range you could see 90, 100 targets? Not really. And we'll just take him and see what his health is like. I'm going to take a late round flyer on a guy like John Bates just to see, because listen, if Logan Thomas kind of funks out, I think John Bates is super sneaky. And but if Logan Thomas is healthy, John Bates is an easy cut for me, probably. So that's probably something I might attach to. Stacking the Washington tight end position seems ludicrous, but that's something I think I'm open to later on. And I won't carry that into the season, but yeah, that's, I'm sort of holding that roster spot in the meantime for a better injury away running back. Then Jamal Williams and Gus Edwards in the 17th and the 18th round. So that's where I'm at as the time of this recording. Going to keep fleshing out the running back position, get real heavy there. And again, I'm going to get super deep at running back, because then I can deal from depth and figure that out. Again, Jacobs, Connor, Kamara, paired with those quarterbacks, and if Goddard is a tight end one, like, and I have Keenan Allen as well, we're in good shape, right? We're at least in fighting shape. And if I am right on some of those things, I've got the assets to back it up and sort of, pour it on, if you will, right? To really exploit that success and have a breakthrough for this year. So, I think about, like, using some different strategies, some different tactics, or trying to open different windows. It's funny, I put out a Twitter poll on this team, again, is this the optimal play to do it? Like, I don't think it worked perfect, but this is what I pivoted to. Like, I wanted this team to be competitive, and I saw that I wasn't going to be able to do the Kittle Kelsey stuff. And so I said, well, let's pivot, and I still want to be competitive, but let's pivot. And it's right kind of how it ends up going. And listen, could I potentially get a guy like, Kittle or Kelsey, something like that, with some of these picks later? I probably could, right? So we'll see there on how that goes, but that's just what my overall thought was. I did put this out on a poll, 12 rounds into a super flex tight end premium startup, with the following team: Herbert, Stafford, Connor, Kamara, Jacobs, Keenan Allen, Hopkins, Lockett, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Evan Ingram, Dallas Goedert, and Hunter Henry. Is this team competitive? And 59% of the team says, 59% of the respondents say no. All right. Like that's not a typical build. What people don't realize in that is that there's multiple future firsts attached to it, right? That there's multiple seconds in there, right? That there is actual assets there backing that up. And this is the funny part about this is 3 to 5 years ago, a team like this, built like this, wouldn't have extra picks. It would probably have to have traded up to get these assets, right? To get the producing running backs and the producing wide receivers and the like there. Now, I think, especially the trade up into the first round, it's not as lucrative of a trade down as it used to be. So you're able to get away with doing both. And I think that that is such an exploitable thing. It keeps multiple windows open, right? I talk about, you know, if you're trying to, if you're trying to get out of a hallway, right? You want as many, right? If you're being attacked or if there's a fire, right? You want as many doors and windows to jump out of as you can. You know, think about one of those horror movies, right? You think about the guy, with the satirical, commercial where they go into the garage with the chainsaws, right? That's trading up for insulated wide receiver, right? That's trading up for Drake London. This is very much like, all right, well, this is, we're gonna run, you know, we're gonna get in the car and start driving and try and get away from this person with a chainsaw. That is what we're doing, because listen, if the tire blows, at least we have more room to get away, right? Like, or hey, if we actually do get away, we can really drive away from this person, right? To sort of use that commercial, which I think is so funny when they back into the chainsaw, to the garage filled with chainsaws to try and hide from the villain in the horror movie. So that's really the plan. Again, it's a little bit of a, it's funny because I thought that my first startup draft or my most recent one before this was like a textbook draft. This was very much not, but it becomes a pivot. It very much becomes a pivot and a, trying something different, right? Trying to fill in being competitive this year with those future assets, and we'll see how it goes. So this is a bet on, isn't necessarily a bet on that I'm going to be right this year, but it is a bet on if we are right, we'll be able to know what to do with it. And I think that that's really the beauty of the two-way go. So, all right, well, that's going to do it for this edition. And until next time, you had 57 minutes of me talking about startup drafts. So I hope that, hope that gets you through any long travel weekend here for your 4th of July. And until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.